as a coach and as an investor, you can either go and try and do it yourself, but average investor spends 864 active hours looking for the right property. Every month you don't own a property, you are losing $2,800 a month. You want a broker who understands the right plans for your strategy. Right. That's another thing that people get wrong is they go directly to the bank. Stop going to a bank, go directly to a broker.
All right, guys, today's guest is an absolute go-getter who is quickly making a name for herself in the property space here in Australia. After falling into the 9-to-5 as a call center worker, she realized that there had to be a better way to spend her life, and she started to become obsessed with property. She got smart and strategic with it all and started on her journey, and within a few years, she was able to reach the top 1% of property investors in Australia in her 20s. This vehicle has allowed her and her partner to both quit their jobs and at the same time live off the cash flow that they were producing. After learning the hard way of what worked and what didn't work, she became fed up with the lack of information on this topic and has since pivoted to now helping millennials learn everything there is to know to get ahead with property and fast track their property portfolio to generate cash flow and build wealth. So please help me welcome the woman who went from working at her parents' cafe at the age of 10 to now having her own property coaching business helping millennials build cash flow through property, my friend Olivia Ward.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you on.
I'm pumped. That's my favorite topic. It's just Let's get wild.
let's dive straight in because we're chatting before we're recording, and then we're like, okay, this is all really good shit. So talk to us. How old are you now?
I am 31.
31. Okay. And you've been in property for how long?
7 or 8 years.
7 or 8 years. And you've got 7 properties.
Yep. Just sold one, so now I've got 6 left. Yep.
Okay, cool. Boom. Tell us, why did you sell one? I asked you that, and then I'm like, no way, I'm going to ask this in the interview. So, why did you sell one?
Okay. Basic, short of it is it didn't tick all the boxes that I now teach to not get stuck. So, it was holding me back from a financial perspective. So, I did just like what everyone does, mum and dad tells you to go buy a house, it's apparently a good thing to do. No one can really articulate why. They just tell you that property's good, so just do it. I just did that. I just went and bought a property in wherever I could afford at the time when I was young, when I was like 25. But I didn't know what I was doing, just like everyone else. And so as I've grown my knowledge, I've now worked out that actually you need to have certain boxes to tick so you don't get stuck. And one of those boxes is it must be cash flowing, and that property was not cash flowing. So therefore it was holding me back from a lending perspective for me to move forward. So right. It was holding me back. Be 10xing my portfolio, basically.
So it was negatively geared.
Correct.
Which is so funny because I can't remember who. Someone said to me the other day, it might have been our broker, but I'm really not sure. Someone said to me, like, well, if you got this property, it wouldn't be bad. It'd be negatively geared, but you could tax. And I just said, I was like, that's fucking dumb. Why would I look at saving money when I should be looking at something that's going to give me money? Like, amen. But when it's negatively geared, you can save money on tax. I'm like, that's such a broke way of looking at money. How can I save money? I want something that's going to give me money.
Yeah.
And then I worry about the tax on that. But that is the thing. I've heard that as well. Like, negatively geared property. And So apart from that, how else was that property holding you back?
The other bucket that it didn't tick was that it was brand new, right? So I did house, I found a land and went and built. And then another thing with properties, when you're building a whole entire portfolio, you want the option to add some sort of value to it, right? Such as doing a small cosmetic renovation or adding on a granny flat or doing a subdivision, just something as an extra card up your sleeve as an exit strategy, right? So I looked at this property, my whole entire portfolio, it was holding me back, negatively gearing, right? Because the whole game of building a property portfolio is actually just a game of finance.
Actually, yeah.
It's just money. Right. That's it. Money in, money out. And it was money out consistently. But because of the fact it was new, it also meant that I couldn't add value to it later on down the track either. So I was like, right, the 3 buckets it needs to tick, it wasn't ticking 2 of them. So let's get rid of it and let's replace it with something that is going to then tick all those 3 boxes. And so a lot of people get upset sometimes where they're like, I have to sell. Whereas actually I look at that property as a blessing because it still gave me capital growth to be able to move forward and build out my portfolio. So that had, it had a purpose. Because when you're building a property portfolio, just like what you're saying, money, right, is it's just a business model. Mm. So it's got to make money.
So what are the three buckets then? So one was it shouldn't be negatively geared. Correct. Second is not brand new. Is that right?
Yeah, buying established.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, I'll come back to that. What's the third one?
The third one is growth, meaning you want it in the top, in a very good booming suburb, so that whatever money you put into the deal, ideally within the next 12 to 18 months, you want to be able to pull out that same money as equity to use that as a deposit to pay the next one, so that you don't have to keep saving for each deposit, right?
So how do you determine what's a growing city?
Growing city, good question. So you can either A, try and do it on your own, such as looking at things like infrastructure, what's migrating people into areas, vacancy rates, supply versus demand, all of these sort of data. What I learned as a coach and as an investor, you can either go and try and do it yourself, but the average investor spends 864 active hours looking for the right property. Now, Mr. Businessman here, you tell me how much money you could be making your business, right, with that same amount of time versus just outsourcing it to a buyer's agent, for example, who can then guarantee and get you that growth and do the work for you. So it's very similar to building a portfolio. It's very similar to growing a business. You've got to learn to outsource.
Mm.
Outsource the things that you are going to lose opportunity, because that's an opportunity cost.
Yeah, just 100%. In
itself. Yeah.
What do you think about the Gold Coast?
Right now to buy in?
Yeah.
Put it this way, my team are not buying in Gold Coast right now for investors. You want those three buckets? This is the thing, right? Is that within real estate, there's like 50 different ways of making money. Mm-hmm. They all work.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of which strategy is going to align to you and your lifestyle and your goals.
Yeah.
So I teach the easy way. You want to do the easy way and continue to build wealth slowly, steady but safely, but at the same time, also be able to live your life as well.
So what do you mean by that? Like getting something that's just a lot less, like because everything on the Gold Coast is just quite expensive now.
Correct.
Is that what you're meaning? So like because you just have to borrow a lot more, higher mortgage, yada, yada, yada.
Correct, which means lower rental yields, which means it's not going to be cash flowing as much typically. But the thing that you want to have is the growth, right? And is there enough infrastructure and planning that governments are building in at the moment to drive heaps of people in here? It might look like it, but then you've also got to – there's actually 147 points of data
to look for. To see if it's a top.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, right? So if you want to do that on your own, go for it.
That excites me, 147 pieces of data.
Yuck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm excited by that. Most people are not. Right?
Yep.
And then there's an algorithm to understand which data point weighs more than the other one as well. So there's a lot involved. And so, but the thing is, right, is that you could just go out and buy a property. Like people do this in Australia. You just go out, buy a property, because it is factually true, the property will double every 10 to 12 years. So wow. Even if you bought the property at the wrong place, at the wrong time, at the wrong location, you know what? You actually still do all right.
Yeah, I said this to someone the other day, actually. I'm like, at the end of the day, I don't even have a property. Yeah. I don't think you can go wrong with property, really. It's like I heard T. Harv Eker said in Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, he's like, don't wait to buy a property and wait.
Yes.
Right? So, you're saying, so on average, here in Australia, the value of your property is going to double roughly over 10 years.
Every 10 years, 10 to 12 years.
That's insane.
Yeah, right. Now, a lot of my clients over in WA or South Australia would definitely disagree with that, because over in those sort of states that don't have it in the past have not typically had similar sort of growth that we'd have on the East Coast.
I don't think anyone lives there, is it?
Well, do you want to know a fun fact? Is that 70% of the people leaving Sydney during 2021 migrated to Perth.
Really?
Yep.
Why? I thought they got smashed even harder with lockdowns and stuff.
So this is one of the other data points is we need to look to affordability.
Right.
So where is it affordable for humans to live? And then you've also got lifestyle factors as well. Beaches over there, incredible, right? Yeah. So if I can have the beach lifestyle, which is what technology opened us up to during during lockdowns, right? Yeah. So, oh my goodness, I can do this business stuff. I can make money from home now, right? I don't need to live near the city. I can have that beach lifestyle. Oh, but hang on. Where are the beach lifestyles that are more affordable? Oh, well, there's a lot of affordability over in Perth, isn't there? So does it mean that you just go over and buy in Perth? Absolutely not, no. Not if you want to do it the smart way. There's particular suburbs, right? Because there's like, I don't want to get into the weeds of this, but there's over 15,264 suburbs in Australia. At any one given moment in time, roughly somewhere between only 15 to 30 of them are classified as a top 1% suburb in that window.
And that's changing, you said, every roughly 6 weeks.
Six to about 12 weeks, yeah, sort of like sort of thing on average. So it might be 6 months in an area where the data might say, yeah, cool, keep God buying in there. But then all of a sudden, everyone else starts to find out.
But how does that make sense, though? Because, like, let's say if you buy somewhere in the top 1% now and it's amazing now, but you want to keep a property essentially forever if it's done right, then you're saying that something else is, so it's not going to be in the top 1% potentially in 6 weeks.
So the idea is to get it in the top 1% at the start of your journey so you can pull out the equity to move you to the next one. Then you just hold it for the long term to do the average growth. So it's all about timing, yeah, because you want to build that portfolio quickly.
Yeah.
And for most people, it's the average one in my industry, we always laugh about the average scenario is just get one property per year for 10 years, we'll get you 100K worth of passive income.
Is that real?
Yeah, that's pretty standard, stock standard. One property per year, 10 years, and then you have 100K passive income.
All right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the system then, and if, like, because, you know, we get government grants, 15 grand or what, is it 15 grand?
First it's very, buyers? It differs state to state. Okay. Yeah. So typically just, 10 to 20K is the usual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're giving you that if you buy a brand new home.
Mm-hmm.
And so if for first home buyers, wouldn't that be useful to capitalize and get that and get a brand new one? Or is that like a little carrot they're dangling just to get people buying new stuff?
Yeah. Well, that's the purpose of it, right? It's the government's purpose is just to drive people to build more houses because we have the highest shortage of property that we've ever had. So we are at catastrophic levels in Australia right now. Like, we just do not have enough dwellings for the amount of people migrating to Australia.
Right.
So my answer is take whatever levers you can to get in. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't save quick enough to have to be able to purchase an established property, then do the new build. I did it. I did the new build. I claimed the first homeowner's grants and I did that to get in the deal at the start.
Mm.
Foot in the door. That's all it is. Because that's what grants are for, right? It's there to help you leverage and get in.
Yeah.
And so if your savings rate is not high enough to catch up with the rate that the established properties are moving towards, then go for it, whatever you need to do. But that's something that I work quite closely with people on as well because I'm a big advocate of also of rent vesting. Rent vesting.
Okay, what's that?
Do you know what that is? No. Okay, so rent vesting, it's my favorite topic. So rent vesting is basically where you rent wherever you desire to live, but then you invest wherever the numbers make sense. So you invest where you can afford and where it makes sense to invest.
So rent where you want to live.
Correct.
And invest where makes sense.
Correct, yep.
Yep.
It's the new most common way that some millennials are forced to do. But actually, rent vesting has some huge benefits to it from a lending perspective. When you buy a home, it's not cash flowing. It doesn't produce income.
You're in it.
Because you're in it.
Yeah.
You're paying it off. You're grounded and going to your 9-to-5 job to pay that thing off, right?
Yeah.
No one else is paying that off for you. Imagine if you moved out of that, lived in the house next door, had someone else pay that off for you. Guess what? Bank loves you a lot more.
Right.
Yes.
So the bank likes you more if you're renting where you live.
Yes. A lot more.
Why?
Because the property doesn't produce income if you live in it. So you imagine all of a sudden you've got, let's just say you get a mortgage of $400,000. You're paying for that $400,000. That's coming out of your income. But if you've got another family paying that off, boom. Then you've also got other things that you can get from a tax deductible perspective. Now, this is obviously not financial advice, but there's also tax incentives as well for not living in that home. Such as if you were to move out of the home that you lived in and went and lived next door, My mother-in-law actually used to say this to me all the time because I actually never ended up living in that first house that I built. She's like, sweeties, why don't you girls live in that property that you first bought? And I said, because, Ma, it's $20,000 per year cheaper for me to not live in it. She's like, how? I said, because I get all these tax deductions such as the rent, the mortgage repayments that you pay, the interest on the mortgage, it's tax-free. Government, it's just a set of incentives. This is the way. I don't know if you know who, Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? He's a tax advisor. He's a very, very famous tax advisor. He says, look at incentives as a, sorry, look at taxes as a set of incentives. Meaning, if you're a big business owner, thank you, Mr. Big Business Owner, for creating jobs. Here's a bunch of tax incentives. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Investor, for investing in homes for people to live in. Here's a bunch of tax incentives. So you get a lot of that as well. And tax incentives can also go towards your borrowing capacity and helping leverage even more money as well. So it's just a very, very powerful tool for investing.
Right. Have you ever thought about living a life with more freedom, more certainty, more clarity and confidence? Have you ever thought about what it would be like for you to truly live a life by design, not by default? If so, then listen up. Guys, I've got something absolutely incredible coming up that you guys are want to be a part of. It's called the Life by Design Summit. How to create a life on purpose with passion and freedom without needing to have it all figured out yet, even if you don't know where to start or if you've tried everything before. Look, chances are if you listen to this podcast, whether this be the first time or the 100th time you've listened to this, you are a dream chaser. You are a go-getter. You have big ambition inside of you. You have this burning desire inside within that is just waiting to be unleashed and to go into something worth meaning, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be here listening. I've literally created this summit specifically for you. It is a virtual event, so it doesn't matter which country you're in. You can get access and jump in live with me for 3.5 hours, okay? In this summit, you're going to learn the secrets that I've learned, that I've developed over the years to build the life of freedom that I currently have now. You're going to learn how to find your purpose in life and actually get paid for doing something that you love. You're going to learn how to discover unlimited motivation, even on the days you feel lost, stuck, and you don't want to do anything. And you're also going to learn my 4 secret pillars to bridge the gap from where you are right now to the life you truly desire. Guys, there is no better time than right now to attend this upcoming summit. It's going to blow your freaking mind. To top it off, this is not some free, shitty masterclass, free webinar where I'm just going to bore you to death, give you 10% value, and then just fluff you around, waste your time, and then sell to you. This is 3.5 hours of pure gold, pure value, specifically for you so you can get to the next level in your life. Tickets are $47. That's it. And there's not even a sell on the call. So what are you waiting for? Hit the link in my bio right now. Hit the link in the description below of this episode. Get your ticket and I'm going to see you live in person on the virtual event coming up next. Guys, I cannot wait to see you on the Life by Design Summit.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Me and my partner talk about this a bit because we're thinking about buying property now. It just sort of makes sense. Like, I want to start just accumulating assets. And we usually just do a lot, like, I just have a lot of shares. We just do a shares investing because I don't have to fucking think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It pays dividends and stuff as well. And I think next year we might start getting into diversifying and getting some properties.
Mm.
And we kind of go back and forth in this because she's like more gradually looking to like nicer places. And I'm like, if it's investing, like we should just get something like kind of shit, like shittier. And then, because if we get this as the brand new place off the plan and we built in like 3 years, in 3 years, we're making fucking gangster money. I'm not even going to want to live in that. I'm going to have a penthouse paying $5,000 a week in Puerto Rico or some shit, you know? And I learned that from Grant Cardone.
Hey.
Grant rents his, I think he said, I could be totally wrong with this number. Mm. I think like it's astronomical. I swear I heard him say once his monthly rent at his whatever he lives in Miami is about 100K.
Whoa, a month, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, he's got $7 billion of property that they manage.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that just made a lot of sense to me because I just imagine the upkeep and all the stuff you'd have to pay as the owner if you go buy a $10 million property or something just gangster live in. So it's always sort of made sense to me. What are some other myths that people have around property that you see people that hold them back from getting started?
That they treat all of Australia as one big market and they watch the news and they watch the articles, the doom and the gloom of, the property market's collapsing. Or just because the market says that Melbourne and Sydney's collapsing does not mean that every other area is in Australia. At the moment, for example, there is a slight downturn in Sydney, Melbourne and Canberra. But guess what? There's so many areas right now that are going up, up, up 10, 20, 30% in 2022. And there was all this doom and gloom because of interest rates. So that's one big thing, is that people just hold off because they're scared. They think that the whole market is one market and it's just not. In fact, not even just a suburb level, even down to a street level is its own market.
Right.
Right. That would be one. Number two would be analysis paralysis. Constantly investors are just like, I need to know everything. It's like, no, sometimes there's like the top maybe 20% of information you need to know to leverage to that you need to know about what your broker does, your accountant, your buyer's agent, whatever, right? Sometimes you just need to take action and get bloody in the market. Because here's a fun fact for you.
Mm-hmm.
For every month you don't own a property, you are losing $2,800 a month.
How does that make sense?
Cool. So that equation I got by using the average purchase price of $500,000 property purchase based on the average increase, the capital growth increase of a property in Australia is about 7%, technically 6.8%.
Mm-hmm.
So that 7% of $500,000 equals about $34,000 a year, which is about $2,800 a month. About $93 a day.
And that's just growth. That's just capital growth, correct?
Capital growth, so not including cash flow.
Cash flow still.
Correct.
Damn.
Right?
Okay. So what you said, there's only like people just paralysis of analysis. They think about too much things. What is the most important things to be focusing on?
The people that you employ, the people you have on your team. So making sure the most important person you have on your team is your broker. Right. That's another thing that people get wrong, is they go directly to the bank. Stop going to a bank, go directly to a broker.
Why? Because what, the broker shops around for your best deal?
Correct. Think of your broker as like your lawyer to make you look to sell you on paper to a lender. And the thing is, there's over 440 different lenders in Australia.
Right.
Mortgage lenders. Most people are just like, oh, this is the top 10, you know? No, it's 440 of them. Don't you want the option of getting 440 options right on the table? Well, Grant Cardone teaches. This is his number one line. He's like, who's got my money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care what the interest rate is. I don't care what the name of the bank is. Just give me your money so I can put it over here in this well-oiled machine and make more money.
That's interesting, the interest rates.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that, though, so the main thing that people should be doing is getting the right people on that team.
Yep.
Broker, who else?
Broker, buyer's agent. If you want to become an investor, you need the right buyer's agent as well.
Yeah.
They're probably the two most important people, or me, wink, wink.
Yeah.
I fast track you to all those people. That's basically what you do. You get on my team. Cause I've gone through 12 brokers. Finally.
There's so many questions I want to ask. Keep talking. I'm trying to write it all down. Yeah.
I could go on forever about this stuff.
Keep it going.
Yeah. So yeah, I've gone through 12 brokers.
Yeah. Right.
Over the last 8 years. And when I look at a broker, I want a broker whose niche is the same strategy that I'm going to follow. I'll give you an example. I don't want a broker who's sitting there primarily focused on helping owner-occupiers. Why? Because he's looking at different package deals with all the different lenders. He's too busy. That's too much going on. That's too many plans. So you've got 440 different lenders right in Australia. And then on top of that, every one of them have like their own package deal. Like, you know, when you go to Optus or Telstra, right? And you're like, oh, which plan, mobile plan am I going to get? Same thing at the banks. They have different plans for different type of lending. You want a broker who understands the right plans for your strategy. So I don't want a broker who's primarily serving owner occupiers. I'm not doing negative gearing strategy.
Mm.
So I also don't want a broker who follows that strategy at all. So my strategy, if I'm doing positive gearing, I want a broker who's focused on positive cash flow strategies and working with those lenders.
Okay. So I'm assuming, so when you're going through your, because I wrote here like why 12 different brokers is because they're focused on different strategies.
Correct.
Of lending for you.
Correct.
You talked about before like 50 different ways to make money through property and you're picking a different strategy.
Mm.
What is your strategy, if you don't mind sharing, and what are some other ways that people might be thinking or misconceptions about ways to make money in property?
Okay, good questions. So my strategy is essentially buy bread and butter houses. So like houses right now, those would be entry-level houses around the $300 to $450 sort of purchase price, where a family will always need to rent, right? Yeah. Because it's already the lowest, it's already the cheapest, it's already in areas that are affordable, can't go down, right? So buy them, spread my capital as much as far as I can, so putting the least amount of money into my deal. So I like to leverage high, so go to 90%. And I pay alimony, I've paid it 9 times. That's another thing that people think that they have to do is put down 20% deposits. Not true. You can put down 10% deposits as investors. And I'm a big advocate of that when you're starting to build out your portfolio. Because most people don't have much money when they're starting out, right? When they're building wealth. You need to put down the least amount of deposits as possible. So yeah, buying cheap entry level bread and butter properties and just holding on to them and live off the cash flow. But you cannot be in a rush. Property is a It's not a get-rich-quick scheme, but it is a get-rich-for-sure scheme.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to think of it in 10-year cycles. I didn't realize that when I was an investor starting out, that was one of the key strategies, attributes that I had as an investor was in my 20s, I was thinking about my portfolio for my 40s. I've got millennials who come to me today and it's like, Liv, make me retired in 2 years. I want 3 years. And I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. You need to think of it in, if you can think about what it's going to give you in 10 years from now, and we can do that forecasting, then you'll be sweet.
Yeah. So is it, how realistic is it for the average person to get 10 properties in 10 years and $100,000 a year in cash flow?
Very realistic. All you need right now is, if you work with me and my team, a minimum of $85,000 in cash or in equity in an existing home. And to be able to borrow $350,000. That's it.
Really? What's the 85K?
The 85K is to cover all costs, deposits, stamp duties, professional services, everything end to end, right? You can actually, though, go out and do it all on your own for like, I mapped out one the other day with a client, $35K.
Right. What was the difference in, that's like 50 grand. What's the difference in that?
Difference is that's them getting the grants, government grants, as a first home buyer. That's why.
Okay.
So that was one, because you only need to put up a 5% deposit these days for first homeowners.
Right.
Yeah. That's a big one, so reducing your deposit down. And the second one is them doing it all on their own, just sourcing a property, right? Not.
Sounds horrible, that one.
Yeah.
I've got here the buyer's agent.
Yeah.
Can you tell, what is a buyer's agent?
So buyer's agents, okay, cool. To give context, this is how I came, let me tell you about how I came up with this first, because I actually thought I wanted to be a buyer's agent myself, and I actually enrolled into the Buyer's Agent Institute of Australia like 2 years ago thinking, let me go back another step. So after property number 2 and 3, I saw some on my own, right? And it took me 6 months. I would literally be on my holiday. I remember on this cruise ship, cruising around Australia and sourcing my own properties. Now that was a lot of effort and a lot of time. And I had my 9-to-5 job as I was just a call center worker, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'll also put that out.
I love that, because that just destroys anyone listening to this thing. And, oh, but how can I start on, because it's not like you had a big corporate sales role or nothing like that. You're just working in a call center.
Yep, working in a call center for Optus.
Yeah.
Like 10, 12 years.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, so I was searching for these two properties. I landed number 3, whatever. I ticked all the boxes and I did it right. Right. And I was like, far out, that's a lot of effort. I'm going to go find a buyer's agent. So then I went to my mentor, who I looked up to. Right.
Who is that?
His name's Nathan Birch.
Okay.
He's a very cocky sort of guy, but I love him. Anyways, really, really good to learn from. And then I was like, yeah, cool. I'm going to pay you for your buyer's agent service. His service, though, bless him, really good guy. Business model was absolutely horrible at the time, right? So didn't go ahead with that. I then went to his competitor, who was another younger guy, whose service was actually better, like from an educational perspective. But guess what? Sourced my property for me 4 years ago in Brisbane, and I've seen zero growth, even till today. In 2023, still has not grown in value.
Where in Brisbane?
Riverview? Yeah.
Riverview. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it hasn't grown capital growth at all.
No. 4 years,
even through COVID.
Even through COVID, right? And so this is the reason why.
But what about with the Olympics coming up?
Maybe in 10 years. That's 10 years away, right? Yeah. That's slow. Again,
yeah.
You could just buy a property and just wait it out 10 years. But who wants to wait 10 years to build wealth? Yeah. I don't, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, far out. So what went wrong with that guy was that what he was doing, because he had such a successful business, is he was using the funds from his business to come up with a deposit for every property. Now, again, that's a strategy. If you have a business that's doing really well and you want to come up with a deposit for each strategy, for each property, go for it. That's one way. But most Australians cannot sit there and consistently save a deposit over and over and over again. Most people, Australians, struggle just to save the first one to get in the door.
Yeah.
So that's why I teach the easier way, right? So it turns out his strategy was just buying within a 20 to 30 kilometre radius with any major capital city. And I was like, I could have just done that and gone on to realestate.com. Actually, my own properties that are sourced on my own before you outdid it. So then I enrolled into the buyer's agent course.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in there and I was like, hell no, this is not for me. I did not like the bar that they were setting. They weren't teaching the fundamentals of what a buyer's agent should be doing to help investors. So I was like, I just did not want to be recognized as that part of that industry.
Yeah.
So then I had a bit of a sulk for like 3 months because I was like, what am I going to do with my life? I thought that was my passion. That's what I wanted to do. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, hang on a sec. I'm still trying to grow my own portfolio. I need to go look for a buyer's agent to at least source something for me because I just don't have the time to keep up buying my own properties. And then I finally found one that ticked all of my boxes for me. Amazing results. And I was like, hang on a sec. Why don't I just partner with these guys? Mm-hmm. And I still wanted to be a part of, because for me, my highest value is impact. Mm-hmm. And I just want to make a huge impact on the people around me. So I just truly believe that once we are all financially free, we have our basic living expenses met. Emotionally, you talk about it too, right? You're able to give back 10 times more.
Yeah.
Because your basic needs for your family is looked after. And so I was like, I had that. I reached that at the age of 30. I was like, or 31. I was like, oh, I want to be able to show people how to do that too and be a part of that too. That's when I was like, oh, I found the buyer's agent that does absolutely everything and that really high quality of service. I'm going to go partner with them.
Yeah. So you've partnered your services now.
Yeah.
Just with a buyer's agent. So I was thinking like, so what makes your buyer's agents better? So is it because you partner with this one person or this one company that you've done your due diligence on and that you pass?
Yep. Correct.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest things that makes them stand out is from my knowledge, and mind you, I'm in the Buyers Institute group, so I know most of them all around Australia, right? So I have a pretty good connection. From my knowledge, they're the only ones that have a property performance guarantee. I can't go too much into that. I'm not allowed to, but they're literally like guaranteeing the growth. The other thing is what they do is they actually have a data team. They're about 100 employees. So they have a data team, 22 PhD qualified data scientists, where that's their core job, just to sit there and analyze data. Property data all day. I don't have the time to do that. They also have an AI machine. I think that costs them like $2.5 million per year of AI to improve that data as well. That these data tech guys are just like 9 to 5 improving it. So I was like, I personally, as an investor, I cannot go up against that. Why would I want to?
Yeah.
And how cool could it be if I could empower people to have that same access to?
Now, what does these people cost? Because I'm sure people are thinking, because the average person, I love this quote. I don't know where it came from. I don't think I made it up, but poor people spend money.
Mm.
Sorry, poor people spend time to make money and rich people spend money to make time.
Boom.
So they tend to look at things, well, what's this going to cost me? How am I have to pay? Now, I'm going to assume the buyer's agents make their money in a deal. through making the deal, or mm-hmm. do we actually pay a buyer's agents a fee?
For most people, you'd be looking at paying for buyer's agents a fee, right? For most of them, they're a flat fee. I think the good ones who charge a flat fee is good because then they're emotionally attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
Emotionally detached, sorry, to the outcome rather than those who pay a percentage because who charge a percentage. Because if they're charging a percentage, I would question it because then it would be in their interest to offer more on the deal.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's yeah, the opposite yeah. to a sales agent, right? Sales agent.
What sort of fee?
So, yeah, cool. So typical buyer's agents, you're looking anywhere between about $15,000 to $25,000, depending on the agent.
Them to source the deal for you.
Yep, correct.
Yeah.
And what you also want to have a look at, though, is you want to have a look at what sort of data points do they look at behind the scenes? How are they actually going to look at some examples of the properties months and months later, like 12 months later, because it's all good for buyer's agents to turn around and say, oh, look at this amazing property I got with this awesome yield. Yeah, okay, cool. But I want to know how it's going to perform 12 months later. So give me that data. So that's a couple of things to look for. Some other things you want to look for is what is excluded out of their service. So with a good buyer's agent, you want them to do everything for you other than what they legally can't, which is signing your mortgage documents.
So they do all the headache shit for you.
All the headache stuff, right? If you're a business owner, you haven't got time for that sort of stuff. My business owners have come to me, who are like time poor. They're like, Liv, I'm already, you know, working 60, 70 hours a week. I've got high corporate people come to me the same sort of thing, right? On $500,000, $700,000 a year. And they're also typically the ones that are the most cash flow poor, actually, because their expenses are so high. But they're okay dishing out the money. They're like, yeah, I don't have time. Go. Because there's the opportunity cost there. How much it would cost you physically to swap your time and do the same thing.
Mm.
And then, funny, I also have a lot of clients who come to me who have $500,000, $1 million worth of cash sitting there, and they need 12 months to think about, you know, investing their money. And I'm like, I call them the money hoarders.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you got value from this episode, it goes such a long way. If you can just take 20 seconds of your time, leave me a 5-star rating and written review, then screenshot this episode and share it to your story. And make sure you tag me for that shout out. And until next time, guys, go out there and dream out loud.